This is the Bears Barroom Radio Network. The following program is recorded live and intended for all audiences.
Radio is scripted now. We just come up with it. We don't use computers. We don't rehearse. We're going to talk about this next. We're going to talk about them. We're going to talk about the Bulls. And then we're going to have Brad Bixon. And then we're going to have all this. No. No. If you don't know what you're going to talk about in the top of your head before a show, you shouldn't be in the business. I don't know what you got. I feel like Vince Vaughn in a couple's retreat. The sharks are circling. Old school, baby.
You're listening to the Mike North Advantage, and it begins right now.
That's right. The Mike North Advantage starts right now. I am Aldo Gandia, Mike's wingman, and Mike has done it again. Another very special guest here on the Mike North Advantage, and let's get right to it. Mike North, how are you, my friend?
Great, Aldo. We'll get on with you after we're done with our next guest. You'll be talking, asking some questions. Got the chat board going. Get your chat board questions in, folks. You know this is a busy time of year, podcasting right now, and the Bears Barroom growing at a tremendous rate. We're over 10-5 on the Twitter, getting it done. We're also doing a lot of great shows. I was happy to be on last night with Shy Fans in the Stands with Greg Braggs and Joey Two Scoops. I said he's got to lose the nickname by the time he's 50. You know, you can't be Two Scoops, you know, a little tough. And then Fat Mike, so we had a great time with them. But, you know, the last 3-4 weeks, we've had Joe Theismann on. We had Mike Ditka on. Last week, we had Cole Komet on. Aldo says, now what? Now what are you going to do? I go, that's simple. I picked up the phone yesterday. I made one call. It's a pleasure to be on with a guy that, I mean, it's a life changer. That's what it was when he and I got together at WSCR at the Score. You know, before Wilbon and Kornheiser, yeah, it was a Jiggets in the North. And, I thought we set the template for a lot of things. I thought the station for sure changed the business. And this is one of the main reasons why, along with a lot of other talented people at the Score, it's my old pal, former Chicago Bear, former Harvard Crimson, former captain of the football team, a double threat in radio and TV when it came to after career. I mean, an example set by all, was a pioneer, basically, and he's still young enough where you say, you're a pioneer. It's my old pal, Dan Jiggets. What's up, Jiggs?
Everything is good, Mikey. Just kind of.
You never had a better intro than that, I don't think. I don't think you've ever had a better. And I didn't even write it down because it's, you know what? Even though we started together in 92, and I knew your career from the late 70s, for God's sake, watched you block for Walter. You know, you start thinking about certain things, and then when you're friends with somebody for a long enough time and you know their accomplishments, I left out one. You're a grandpa, and you're a grandpa a couple times over now, aren't you?
Three about to be number four. Oh, boy.
You know, Jiggs, you got to keep the money train going.
Yeah,
are they eating that money up, Jiggs, the kids? You spoiling them?
Yeah, you know, as much as possible. You know what I'm saying. It's part of my duty.
Well, let's talk first, and then we'll get on to some other things. But let's talk about what did you, first of all, we interviewed Frank Komet back in the day.
Right,
and
yeah,
you knew Frank. He's a cousin of mine. And last week we had Cole Komet on. Now, if that doesn't tell you time's flying, what does? First of all, what'd you think of the pick? You liked it?
I really liked it. You know what? It's about time that the Bears finally went and got a tight end from Notre Dame that can play. Because there are a lot of them in the NFL now. And I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but over the last, I'd say, 10, 15 years, Notre Dame's been, like Stanford in terms of producing tight ends for the NFL. So you look at the Rudolphs and those kind of guys, and Ertz and all of those guys. So, you know, with Stanford, between Stanford and Notre Dame, they've produced some awfully good tight ends. And Cole looks like there's going to be another one. So I'm very pleased with that pick, and especially when you're able to get him in the second round. But you know what, Ryan Pace's, you know, I guess you could say his drafting has been spotty at best. This class may be one of his last to prove himself.
You know, nothing drove me and you nuttier. And a lot of things drove us nuts. But nothing drove us nuttier than when the Bears wouldn't draft somebody that was good enough and really in a position to draft somebody at that position
right.
that was from Chicago. They'd always yeah. bypass them. Now, they went after Thayer way back in the day and mm-hmm. Zorich and Butkus. We know about all that.
Right.
But Mike Allstott sticks out in my mind mm-hmm. as a guy from Joliet Catholic. You and I both followed his career. We were incensed. I know they took the defensive back in the day, Walt Harris. But I was incensed by that. Then they had Tony Romo in their backyard, Garoppolo. Mm-hmm. And I had been scouting Cole because of, you know, family interest, but because he's a hell of a tight end, I think he's got great growing possibilities. He hasn't even begun the block yet like he can and get the repetitions he can. But I was fearful. I thought that New England was going to take him at 37. When he fell to the Bears, you knew he was still around, Jakes. Did you think the Bears were going to take him, or was it 50-50 because of the past?
No, I think I really thought that they were going to take him. I didn't mm-hmm. think he, you know, I know this is the old draft thing, you know, we were surprised he was still available, that kind of thing. But, no, you know, just because of the way the first round worked out with, you know, other needs being met, you know, with other teams meeting their needs mm-hmm. in terms of offensive linemen and receivers and all the rest of that, it was just, you know, fortuitous that he was still available there and you couldn't pass him up. That was, I thought, an excellent move. But like I said, you know, we know he's talented. We know what he can do. We watched him at Notre Dame. It'll be fascinating to see how, you know, Matt Nagy extends the offense and builds it around someone like him. In the meantime, you know, they've got Jimmy Graham in here to kind of bridge the gap. But I expect what they'll do with him, with Cole, is try to get him out on the field as much as possible and get him as much experience as possible, because that's the way the league works now. When you draft guys high, you got to get him out on the field and let him keep playing. Don't sit a guy and try, you know, well, we're going to season him a little bit. It doesn't work that way anymore. Get guys out, let them play, let them feel comfortable and understand what they've got to do to be successful within the framework of the league. That, to me, is what it's all about, because the more you sit someone, the worse it gets for them, in my opinion. Yeah, you know, it's the kind of thing where if you're used to playing, just keep rolling and watch someone develop. Because, look, let's be honest, they're not going to a Super Bowl this year, okay? I think mm-hmm. we've all kind of, you know, come to the realization that that's probably not going to happen. So what do? You start building the framework of a team that you think that you might be able to take to a Super Bowl. And the way to do that is to get these young guys, put them out there on the field and let them play.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point, because I brought that up to Cole last week. I said, listen, Jimbo Covert, I said, he came into camp his rookie season
mm-hmm.
looking to win a job and
yeah.
looking to be on the field. And I guess he was on the field right away. I don't know if Cole's got that because of Jimmy Graham, but I think there was a window there, and you never know about injuries, too,
mm-hmm.
where he's got a shot. I mean, like
Jake,
he's not. They're not going anywhere for. Well, they may be going somewhere. That's the thing. Do you think they're not going anywhere?
No,
and do you think they are?
The way you get there is by taking the guys that you've drafted and putting them on the field along with the guys, you know, who
mm-hmm.
you signed, like the Grahams of the world, to you know, bridge that gap a little bit. But you know what? You're going to need more than Jimmy Graham if you want to go somewhere.
Right.
You know, Jimmy's not exactly a spring chicken. So,
so
you've got to put some guys out there in the field, you know, blend them in and let them all keep playing and let the best players play. That's the whole idea of where they are right now. Put the best guys you got out there and let them play. And don't make the mistake of, you know, one thing that jumps to my mind real quick, Michael, we talk about decisions that you make. The decision on Nick Kwiatkowski bothers me, because there's a guy that you drafted and you brought him through the system, and then when he gets to the point where he's ready to play, he's gone. And so he had to resign Danny Trevathan. We understand that. But that's all part of planning. If you've got a guy that you know is blossoming and ready to play, don't let him slide out of your hands. That's the guy you drafted, particularly when your first and second round picks from years past are gone. You know, that's a lot of capital that's walking out the door, and you can't afford to do that all the time. And that's essentially what's happened with the number one picks. You know, Leonard Floyd being the latest example of that.
Boy, are you on your game. You're right. Not anybody hardly's made anything of the Nick Kwiatkowski thing, and I loved him because he had a nose for the football. You know what I'm saying? Every time he got a chance to play, he would be around the football. And you know what? For some reason, it hasn't been made a big deal of, maybe because of the other situations and because of Foles and Trubisky, which we'll get to in a minute. But you're right, Jiggs. I mean, if you're just starting to get rid of the ones who are successful for you, when you've had other picks that weren't successful, it's like double jeopardy, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And you look around, and then all of a sudden the barrel is empty. And, the decision they made with Prince Amukamara at corner, I can understand that. You know, that's because it gets to a point of money versus, you know, age and all the rest of that. And you've got some young guys. And then they drafted at that position, so we'll see how that works out. But also, you know, you've got some guys there. The kid from LSU at corner, let's see what he can do. With somebody like Nick, because you look at the problems they had, you know, with the inside backers last year when Danny got hurt and then Roquan Smith gets nicked up. That's a guy that you could plug and play. And to me, that was one that was like an unforced error. But we'll see. That's for sure.
Yeah, you'll see, and you'll see how his career progresses. Now, Jiggs, I know this. You and I would have told both sides of the story. I kept hearing there was an open competition. And then as soon as Nick Foles was signed, like 80% of the columnists, the Bear media, everybody else said it was his job to lose. Now, you know this, $20 million for 2 years is not a lot of money. If he starts, that's a bargain, number one. But number two, what was really hidden from all this, and he's one of the biggest free agent busts in history with Jacksonville, at 4 years, $88 million, number one. He played in front of a talented offensive line in Philadelphia in a great system, number two. And they had a big defensive line also. They benefited off turnovers. He's never played a full season. But the thing that shocks me is his last game, being benched by that rookie, the Don Johnson lookalike, having three interceptions and 97 yards. Has the media fully exposed everything about Nick Foles, or are they just, as usual, most of them shading this thing?
Well, no, you know what? I think that one of the things that you look for with a guy like Foles is whether or not, you know, number one, how did he perform when asked to perform with the Philadelphia Eagles? And, you know, everybody can say, well, you know, he had this and he had that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those situations, when you go ahead and win a Super Bowl, you usually have all of those things. But the thing is that if you don't have the pilot, the plane doesn't fly. And he flew the plane.
I'm going to write that one down.
straight
Remember the time we were on the plane and the pilot got on? This is the truth, folks. Jinx and I are in first class. Because that's the only way we wanted to fly.
Absolutely.
And we're on the plane, and the pilot comes over, ladies and gentlemen, in just about 20 minutes, start buckling up your seatbelts. The plane will be hitting the ground soon, and Jiggs yells out, "It's not going to hit the ground. It's going to land." That was beautiful, because the way that he said it, it's like it was going to crash, right?
Yeah, I'm like, hold on a second, wait. That's not the proper language. That reminds me of the time that when we got on the flight from Miami to going to Sarasota for Sox spring training, and we're going through the rainstorm. Remember, that started raining. And then we get on the plane in the middle of the night, and it's like full of prisoners.
It was me, Chicks, and 10 guys in orange jumpsuits handcuffed. with one guy in a suit. You know? He was about 5'8". I'm going, what are we doing here? We took a jumper. with 10 guys that were going to I don't know what island.
And poor little Jesse was scared. He comes back and he goes, Jesse Rogers, he goes,
"Hey, guys, you're in handcuffs."
Oh, we had some great times, man. We did. And you know what? Let's talk really quick, and then I want to get out to the last dance with you. But how do you think Trubisky Foles ends up?
I think it's Foles.
Mike, we
can go all the way back to the draft and all the rest of that. You know who was available and who should they have taken. I think we all know that now. When you look back on Mitchell Trubisky's college career, though, what did he have? 13 starts.
Jiggs, why are they bringing this up 3 years now? I've been on Barroom. You've been all over. We've been on shows. I've been on ESPN 1000. I've been all over the place, pissed off for 3 years they didn't take Watson.
Yeah.
I have been pissed off. Aldo will tell you when he comes on. Everybody all of a sudden's going, boy, wipe the Bears. Yeah, Watson says. Now, Watson murkied the water a little bit by saying, well, they didn't talk to me. Maybe they did. You know what they're talking to you, B. It's not like an interview. They can say, hey, how you doing, and hang up the phone. Right?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I guess Mahomes was a similar kind of a situation. But I don't know what went into that decision, but it didn't.
They tried to play. Some people are trying to play the race card. Now, Jigs, you and I had that luxury because we were white and black. It was a crazy time, and we could delve into things that some hosts just couldn't do. But I look at the history of the Bears. You played with a black quarterback.
Vince,
you know, I'm hearing people say, you know, the Bears didn't want a black quarterback. Willie Thrower. You got Vince Evans. Now, I'm not saying there could have been more. I'm pissed off they didn't take Watson, and it looks sort of funny, and I never gave Mahomes a second thought.
Well, no.
But I was disturbed they didn't take him.
Sometimes what it is that, I guess when you look back, it's maybe it's who you were comfortable with, and maybe they were more comfortable with Mitch. I don't know. Because goodness knows I wasn't invited to the dinner. But I'm glad he knew how to, you know.
My God, if I would have been their GM, I would have never taken Cutler. And if Watson was there for me, I'm grabbing him off the bat. Did they not watch him in college? You know, I'm tired of the combine stuff. I'm tired of all the BS and the superficial numbers.
How high can you jump? And, and what's your 40 time? And, come on. Can you play?
Come on. The guy beat Alabama. The guy came back after Alabama beat him. The guy threw 42 touchdowns. It's unbelievable. The guy led a team like Clemson. You know, Clemson, when I was with you, if every Sunday I'd walk in down money, it was usually because I bet Clemson. They never reached fruition until Watson and, of course, their great coach came in, you know?
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where it was just too obvious. But, you know, I'll never forget, though, the scene, though, at we were at Soldier Field, for the draft show.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Glennon, the human Pez dispenser, I call him.
Oh, man, Mike Glennon. I'm quicker than he is now.
So he was supposed to come on with us, you know, after the first pick was made.
Mm-hmm.
And, he looked like the heir apparent, and everything was looking pretty rosy for him. Had a new deal, $18 million over two. And all of a sudden they make that pick. Mike Glennon disappears on us. He ghosted us, man. We're sitting around waiting for him to come downstairs to talk. And there's a simple crowd of about 2,000 or 3,000 people. And he's gone. He left. And I was like,
I'll never forget, I'm at McMahon's. I'm with Alex Brown.
Right.
And you're working on Comcast. We have people at the radio show. We're doing a remote. And they go, ladies and gentlemen, from the Bears pick Penn State defensive end, Michael Haynes. I go to Alex. I go, isn't it your position? And Alex goes, hell yeah. Right there, you got a guy in his second year. One of the dumbest picks of all time was it reminds me when the Bulls took Marcus Fizer and we had Elton Brand. I mean, just nonsensical stuff. Now, let's get to the last dance. Okay.
All right.
We're not in it. I haven't seen one bit of you or I in it. So I'm just saying that right off the bat. And we spent time with him at Sarasota. We spent time, but I know why we're not in it. Greenberg's not in it. Canellis isn't in it. Tom Doerr's not in it. I notice it's the same old characters. God bless him, Mike Wilbon, who wasn't even here half the time. Andrea Kramer, Rick Kellender with the same stories. First of all, what have you seen of it that you have you liked it? And do you wish there would have been more local flavor? I know they're showing clips. You'll see a Howard Sudbury or Dan Rohn. But do you wish there would have been some new stories? Because, you know, I've heard the Kerr got punched in the face story. You and I have heard this about 300 times.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been fascinating to hear some. You know, to be honest with you, one of the things that I wanted to hear more of was more about Scottie Pippen. Because I think that what has happened over the years maybe is, that picture has kind of developed a little bit more. But, Mike, I'll be honest with you. I think that a lot of people, though, at the time, and you might have been guilty of this more than anybody else, but not appreciating Scotty for who he was and what he
did. I was, and I still am, because he didn't get up off the bench, Jiggs. I know that.
Yeah, but I know. But you know what, though? Somebody brought up a good point. That 1.8 seconds is not career-defining for him.
It would have been if Kukoc don't make the shot.
When you look at all the other things,
see, you just ignored that like you used to. I said if Kukoc doesn't make that shot, you know he's in big trouble in this town
forever. Right, but again,
come on now, you admit that.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing though. You know, when I look at a guy like him, and you know, granted the contract thing, and by the way, he wasn't the only one. They did that deal with everybody.
Remember, he did that with Horace. Remember, Reinstorf said he shook hands with him.
Yeah,
what kind of BS is that? You got a billionaire owner saying, "Yeah, I shook hands with him in the weight room."
Yeah, it's like him and then Horace Grant, and Scotty, Michael. They made Michael play through his contract. Remember?
Reinstorf.
Yeah.
Listen, Reinstorf. He's been a bad owner, Jiggs. I'm sorry. I mean, he paid Michael only because he had to at the end. He had no choice. I think Michael was never happy about that situation, but he kept his mouth
exactly
shut.
Right.
You know, it's a fascinating thing.
But by the same token, though, you know, wow. I disagree with the way that he handled those contracts. When you look at the pantheon of owners of professional sports teams and sports teams in this town in particular, you'd struggle to find one that's done a better job than Jerry Reinsdorf.
Told him not to sign it, Jiggs. That's the goofiest thing I've ever heard. The owner's going, don't sign a seven-year deal.
Come on, man. It's like, stop.
Yeah, but you know what, Jiggs? Pippen had a bad back.
You're bringing in Luke Longley and giving him more money than Scottie Pippen. Steve Kerr was making more money than Scottie Pippen. Let's be honest. Come on.
John Ligmanowski was making more money than Scotty Pippen.
Exactly. John Ligmanowski and Pippen go, "Hey, Scotty, do you need a loan?" Come on. Stop.
Oh, that is fun. That is some special stuff. Remember, we're in the car. It's me, Jiggs, Fritzy, and Jimmy Cavall. And there's a black guy in Arizona walking down the street that's about 6'2". And Jesse's our producer, and he rolls down the window. "Hey, this guy's got to be a player." And Fritzy goes, "Why does every black guy over 6'1"? Every black guy, he swatted us to stop for. And the guy wasn't a player. I think the guy worked at some factory or something.
What are you doing, Jesse?
Jiggs, I'll tell you what. You got the family moving, going. You got everything else moving. Your health's doing good, I understand.
Yep, everything is good, thank God.
How healthy were you I think your health was, I mean, you were a guy that grabbed, like you said, I've read your quotes. You went for every job. You had to. Your opportunities you had to were limited. And you ignored your health a little bit, right?
Yeah, there were times I was working five jobs at a time. But you know what? It's like being a professional athlete, though, Mike. You know you've got a time frame where you can do whatever it is that you're going to do, and then that time's going to dissipate. So that's what I tried to do. I maxed out. I probably should have slowed down a little bit, but at the time things were good, and I just kept rolling. I know better now, and.
I saw your football mentality, folks. This is the truth. Jiggs and I never missed a show. We showed up every day.
We worked
every day, no matter how we felt, no matter what circumstances we were in, believe me, and we worked every day. And I saw Dan have heart failure and you couldn't even hardly breathe, and you worked for a solid week. I said, "Man, I got the right partner, man. We're not going down for nobody." I said, but that's what you're talking about. That was a time when we were rolling, and you said, "Look, I got young kids. Things are going good. I can't stop right now." Remember?
No, it's something my dad taught me. Because goodness knows he worked right till the end of his life, and he said, "You got the opportunity. You got the situation that's in front of you. You go out and you grind." And that's something that I've taught my kids, but I've also taught them though. When you're not well, you take care of yourself. So that's what they learned from me as well. So
And I'll tell you what, I watch Warren every morning. I'm proud of Kristen. I'm proud of all of them, and your lovely wife, Karen. Everybody's doing well. We got Aldo here. Aldo with a couple questions, and he's got the chat room stuff. Aldo, say hello to Dan Jiggins.
Dan Jiggins, how are you? Man, oh, man. You know what? I remember I was working at Channel 2, and you were interning with Johnny Morris in the sports department, and I was just a thrill walking past you in the hallway and saying hi. And I said to myself, man, that is a massive man.
Those were good years there with Johnny, man. I think I spent 6 years working there. But I
love Johnny Morris.
And so they kept me busy during the week working at Channel 2. But I was at CBS Sports for a good 10 years.
Yeah.
And six of those years I spent there at Channel 2 as well.
That was a great foundation for your sports broadcasting career, right, working with Johnny and those guys?
Yeah, Johnny was great, man. And, you know, he and Howard, well, we had a wonderful time working there together. And Johnny taught me a lot, you know, about this business. And I'm forever in his, in his debt to that, because he was just, he was one of those guys that also taught me about the competitive situation in terms of media in Chicago. Because Johnny, loved to compete against,
he was the king.
Seven and Jim Greco and everybody. Johnny was, the consummate competitor.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to let anything slip between he and Bob Vassilopoulos and those guys. It was really great to work over there.
Absolutely.
Norm and everybody.
Yeah, great crowd. Let me take you back a few years earlier than that. It's 1977. It's November. You guys are playing the Minnesota Vikings. You're a member of the hardest working offensive line in the NFL. You guys ran the ball, I think, the third or fourth most of any team in the NFL. And Walter Payton rushes for a then NFL record, 275 yards on 40 carries. Can you take us back to that day and that performance by Walter? What were your thoughts and your interaction with the great Walter Payton?
Well, it was like Grantland Rice said, it was etched against a blue-gray October or November sky. Walter Payton rushed for 275 yards against the Minnesota Vikings. It was one of those days where, we knew we were going to load up a little bit. And Walter just welcomed the opportunity, because the more you ran the ball, the happier he was. And that was one of those days between he and Roland Harper throwing blocks, laying down the wood for him. It was just a great, great day for not only for Walter, but for the offensive line and the offense in general, because that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to line up and punish you with that offensive line. And that's exactly what happened to the Vikings on that day.
Yeah, that was an incredible game. I'll never forget it. And you know what, Dan? I'll never forget the game the week before against the Kansas City Chiefs. Walter ran for 33 times for 192 yards, and it was one of the most thrilling victories that I've ever witnessed in my 61 years of watching football. And that was that 28-27 win over the Kansas City Chiefs. If I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg Latta catches a touchdown over the middle with seconds left to win that game. Am I right about that?
Right. Yeah, the great G-man, Greg Latta, the late great Greg Latta. Not only did he catch that touchdown pass, but remember, on that crazy run that Walter had against the Kansas City Chiefs, look for number 88. Greg Latta throws a second block that really helps out in that situation as well. But it was one of those games where, we didn't see the Chiefs a lot. But that was one game that you really, really wanted, because, at that time, the Chiefs were just coming off, remember, those years with Hank Stram and Super Bowl wins and all the rest of that. So, yeah, we wanted to beat them pretty good, and we didn't see those AFC teams a lot. So that was a great win for us and what turned out to be a wonderful season for the Bears.
I got a couple of questions from the chat room. I got one from my buddy named Jimmy. He wants to know, you were just talking about offensive line and working hard and so forth. What do you think about this season's offensive line, and what can perhaps Juan Castillo bring to the offensive line that Harry Heaston perhaps did not?
Well, I think one of the things you'll see out of Juan is, you look back on where he's been and how his offensive lines have performed. I think you'll see a little bit more, let me say this way, aggressiveness in terms of blocking, the blocking schemes. So let's watch for that. And then also, I'm talking about in the run game. And then in pass protection, let's see how he sets things up and whether or not there's more, you know, cooperative blocking in terms of when you're seeing tricks up front, how do those offensive linemen handle those things. So those are the key things. Offensively, number one, run blocking, and what style of run blocking do you use? And number two, in terms of pass protection, are you switching these guys? Are you going man? Those are important things later on when you take into account what the backs are going to have to do in terms of helping out with the blocking for the quarterback.
Last one from the chat room. It's actually a two-part question here from DeKal Bear. He wants to know your thoughts on the current collective bargaining agreement, and then sort of on a separate subject, he wants your take on the he believes there's a negativity in Chicago sports broadcasting now. Do you agree with that? And if so, what do you think causes that?
No, in terms of the sports broadcasting, I really can't say because the last couple of years I've been out of it. I don't know what I couldn't tell you what it is. But
I hear you.
I think they're all in line. I think for the most part, guys, that it's not even close. In 92 to 2007, 2008, you could phrase it. They took, if you didn't do your job, I know one station, they got a beating. Am I wrong, Jiggs? If you didn't do your job?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yep. You were held accountable. I don't see the same thing. I don't.
No, it seems to me that maybe it's just one of those things where, everybody's afraid maybe to say something. I don't know.
Yep.
But in the times that I have heard something, I'm looking around and going, really?
I do it every week with Aldo. I swear to God, I go, Aldo, I can't believe this. I mean, it's unbelievable, Nick, from everything, the Jay Cutler was perfect. And here's another one. There's no way, during our heyday, that John Paxson lasts 17 years as his GM. None.
No.
Yeah.
No.
None.
No, sorry.
He doesn't. He wouldn't. We love John. He wouldn't have lasted. Yeah. He wouldn't have lasted 7-8 years. I'm serious.
No.
Because he would have had heat.
Well, see, one of the things that tells you a little bit more about how maybe lax things have gotten is that when you see situations like the, where general managers don't want to talk to the public or don't want to talk to the press and kind of act almost bullyish,
mm-hmm.
that tells you something about what's going on.
That's right.
Number one, within the organization, and number two, the relationship between the organization and the media in general and whether or not, you press them. So, if they don't want to talk and you don't press them, then you allow them to get away with things.
And if you press them, you're out the door the next day, or they can't find your clearance, your pass.
Because everybody wants to be, friends with everybody else, and that sometimes that's not the best thing for the team or the broadcast organization.
Hey, I'd like to squeeze one in here from George Bayless. He breaks down film for us here at Bears Barroom, and he's been analyzing the offensive line. He wants to know from a former NFL offensive lineman, how difficult is it to run block when the head coach is only calling 7 run plays out of 65 plays in a game?
Pretty tough. Pretty tough. Yeah, because it's all about mindset, and when you you're game planning during the course of the week. You tell your guys up front, you said, look, man, I'm going to give you a chance to warm these guys up a little bit, okay? So you're not going to be sitting back there, accepting head slaps or whatever. You're going to be able to line up, punish them across the line of scrimmage a little bit, set the tone for the game, and then we'll take it from there. But when you first come out, and you're sitting back and, the guys are running tricks on you and you're trying to pass protect and getting fancy, it doesn't work. Line up. Punish some people up front, let them understand what the game's going to be all about, and then let's get to the other stuff that we have in our playbook. But first of all, establish the attitude with the big fellas, because that's where you win the game.
That's the
what? You know what I saw the other day, guys? I saw Gale Sayers on Twitter. They're running a couple plays.
Mm-hmm.
They showed some of his plays, and Dan and Eldo, you saw the blocking, did it. And I think this is what you're talking about with Castro, with the aggressiveness. Jim Caddeo, Mike Pyle, and those guys, they never knew if Sayers was down or not. After Sayers, they're blocking 10 yards down the field.
Oh,
you didn't see that with this Bear line. They stop after about 1 or 2 yards of pursuit, and the running back's got to take things on then.
Yeah, you get into somebody, hook up on them, and take them out of the picture. And, it's not good enough just to kind of shield them and, okay, my guy's done, I've done my job. Now, you keep driving until that whistle blows. And if you do that, you'll have a success down the field as well. Because all of a sudden, those 5-yard runs turn into 15-yard runs, 20-yard runs. That's the way you exploit the run game.
There you go.
Wow. Jigs, as always, love you. Best of wishes always. I got to see you on TV during the Bears season. You're as sharp as ever. You're covered like a blanket. We had a Greg. I love Greg Latta. I love Johnny Morris, too. Johnny Morris was a stud. Yeah. I mean, just one of the all-time greats. We had a lot of fun with you today. Best wishes to you and the family and the new little tyke coming, and you got three tykes already here. So, Jigs, you're going to be busy, brother.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting ready to chase him now.
All right, Dan. Take care, buddy.
Goodbye, Dan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Awesome, man.
Dan Jiggets.
Just the best.
I'm sorry, we haven't lost it. That's just me. We get together, it's second nature.
That's
right. I mean,
that's
just the way it is. And, you know, it's interesting, his take, Aldo, on a lot of things. I mean, you know, people think that Dan and I disagreed a lot. We were more on board.
Mm-hmm.
See, you can't have it like where you're disagreeing, one guy's disagreeing all the time with the other guy. We never planned any shows, and we were on board 70-75% of the time. It was that other 25% that would go crazy. And I know this, him and I would be battling right now over Nick Foles. That's for sure. I got that out of the interview. But it was interesting. He covered everything.
Yes, he did. I mean, he could have gotten into coaching because he's got such a good mind for the game and he communicates well and so forth. But I'm really happy he got into broadcasting because the two of you made one of the greatest sports radio broadcasting duels in the history of broadcasting. It was just dynamite.
I thank you for that. But he was going to be governor. You know, he was 10-15 years ago. He was being drafted as a possible run for governor.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, he would have been great governor.
Oh yeah,
he would have been a great governor.
Yeah,
and he's a fair guy, and you know what? He brings out stuff you don't think about too. I always got more credit than I deserved, and he didn't get enough.
Mm-hmm.
This Nick Kwiatkowski thing was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How much have you heard about that? We haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, that subject deserves a lot more attention because it is, you know, one of those things, again, the Bears, you know, bring up a player, develop him, and then when that first contract is done, they end up losing him. And it's like, why are you doing that? But I also understand, you know, the fact that they basically chose Danny Trevathan over Nick, you know, and so they wanted the veteran leadership. I think because they're really, really gunning for a Super Bowl this year. I was surprised that Jiggett said that they're not going to the Super Bowl this year, but because I think every player moves that the Bears did this season was for a win now mentality.
Except so, one thing, we don't have the quarterback.
Yeah.
How many teams going in who are Super Bowl or playoff favorites don't know who their quarterback's going to be?
That's right.
That's the biggest thing.
You're right.
That's why, you know, he's for this guy Foles. Fine. I'm for Trubisky. I think they're dangling the carrot in front of his nose, just like in Jacksonville, they're doing the same thing. They're saying Leonard Fournette's going to have a great year. We didn't pick up his fifth option,
right. But
we're planning around him. So it's going to be interesting. I think that's the whole camp right there. If we do have a camp, that's the whole preseason, talking about Foles and talking about Trubisky, don't you think, for the most part?
I'm totally, totally with you. Everything else is going to pretty much fall into place. We'll see who wins that right guard starting position in the offensive line or maybe another position where there's a battle. But the key thing every day is going to be who is the number one quarterback, who's going to get the most snaps in practice, who's going to go out with the first team in a preseason game for the first quarter and so forth. All of that stuff is going to be analyzed and analyzed and analyzed. And I got to believe that Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy really, really want to give Mitch Trubisky every chance to win this job because of the investment they have in this guy. I mean, that's a huge trade up, you know, one pick, the second overall pick in the draft. They don't want to see this guy fail. And I think Nick Foles was brought in to give him competition and to motivate him to play better. And so we'll see if that works. If it doesn't, then it's a big failure for Ryan Pace.
Yeah. I mean, if it doesn't, then, I mean, the one question I didn't ask Dan that I might have, or I should have, but I could ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
If what happens if they're 6-10 this year? And what happens if both quarterbacks are just okay? And, you know, now is Pace and Nagy, are they out the door? Is the door cracked open? You know, is it one of those "Here's Johnny" where you can only see the face before the door shuts? I mean, what is it to you?
I think, you know, Ryan Pace goes to Mr. McCaskey and says, "Here's my plan to salvage this." And if it doesn't sound like a winnable plan, I think he and Matt Nagy are out the door. I think, though, that the McCaskeys are going to be very, very reluctant to get rid of Ryan Pace. I almost think that they see him as their golden child. You know, he
agreed. I think they see him as a son, like.
Yes, exactly.
He looks like McCaskey.
He does. He does.
Believe me. I went nose to nose with Michael. He looks like Michael, sort of. Yeah. A young Michael McCaskey. He does. Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. I wonder how
old. I never trusted a guy whose part is completely straight.
it's too perfect.
It's almost impossible to do. Remember when you tried to get your part straight? You can't.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost. And his part is straight.
Yeah. You know, and the interesting thing, and I'm looking up to see how old is Ted Phillips, because eventually his head has got a roll if they do go through another 6-10
sweaty
season.
Sweaty Teddy's old. Sweaty Teddy's got a lifetime job because he got that stadium deal done.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure it's such a great deal, to be honest.
The worst football stadium in the National Football League, the hardest to get to. You can't find a cab to save your life.
Yep.
You got to walk 3 miles if you don't have somebody parking in the car. It's crazy.
It is nuts. I mean, I love going to Soldier Field because I love seeing the Bears play live, but getting out of there after a game is the most...
But don't you dread going to the game? See, when we went to Soldier Field back in the day, mm-hmm. back before it was remodeled, when they had the AstroTurf and all this other nonsense back in the 70s, we'd get there. We were young.
Yep.
Me and my buddy had a van. There'd be 3-4 of us. We'd get there early. And we'd start partying 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, right? But as we got older and you start going like an hour before the game or 2 hours, it's torture.
It is.
It's torture. And then lately, I went to the Brett Favre game, the last game, the opening of Soldier Field. I said, I'm never coming here again. I ended up going one more time because I had to do a business-type situation over there. But the first game there, I was at the Miller Sky Deck.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, when I thought I was in the Hancock Building watching a play, you know? I swear to God, I saw Brett Favre throw the ball. I know, you'd see him in the motion, and then you wouldn't see the ball, and then you'd see the receiver, because I couldn't see anymore. I'm older now. I'm up 15 stories watching this game.
Yeah.
My God.
I went to a couple of games at Soldier Field before the renovation when it was the old.
With the chain link fence.
Yes.
With the old locks from 1930, the old Yale locks, the combination locks on the door.
Exactly. Oh, great memories. Hey, let's switch subjects here. I want to ask you about the upcoming final two episodes of The Last Dance in anticipation of what they are going to cover. And you know they are going to cover the very famous 97 flu game. Game 5 of the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan. They call it the flu game.
Which would have never happened today. We'd still be in quarantine.
That's right.
Jordan would have hit it in an empty stadium.
That's right. Now, they call it the flu game, but it was a food poisoning game. Let's go back to that time and tell me what your memories are of that, because, again, those producers at The Last Dance really missed a golden opportunity by not having you on there, I'm telling you.
First of all, I think if everybody was honest, they'd say, okay, it's almost over, thank God.
Yeah.
Okay? Because the first date had been good, but when he cried, I think that could have been the end of it right there.
But they
filled up a lot of time. I disagree with Dan. I think, and if you're looking at the trends right now,
mm-hmm.
Scottie Pippen's image is taking a beating in this deal.
It really has,
From the migraine, where Jordan said, are you kidding me? Where he couldn't even comprehend missing a game,
mm-hmm.
To the situation where Scottie didn't get off the bench, to the contract, to other things. I think the biggest surprise to me is Juanita.
Yeah.
And I know, it's not personal business. They're public. I had a guy one time, Bebe and I did a commercial. And somebody faxed your wife was just okay in the commercial. And I sort of at first said, who the f-? But then I said, she's in the public eye. And I think if you're doing a documentary about and it is about the life of Michael Jordan. More than a couple still shots of Juanita. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was his rule, family off. But it's not a true documentary, since she was there for the hellion times, the whole time. Was she not?
Yeah, oh, my goodness, absolutely. And she was
there from beginning to end, man.
Right.
She was there with the cocaine circus all the way through to the end.
Yep. She was the first lady of Chicago sports for many years there.
Yeah,
yes.
Oprah and everything.
Yep, Oprah, exactly. At many social events, you would see her.
You don't hear about his kids or nobody.
Yeah, you know what? That's weird. And there was a local news station here in Chicago that had a couple of the kids on afterwards, but I failed to see it. I saw the promo, and I failed to record it. But that's been it. They have not talked to any of...
You got 10 hours, right?
Yeah.
10 straight hours, Aldo. That's unbelievable for a documentary, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I saw the one on Natalie Wood, which was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a two-hour documentary. God bless her.
Mm-hmm.
Great, you know, stuff. But they went through everything. Michael had 10 hours.
Yep.
And if you ask anybody, pick out his wife or where. And once again, that's his decision, but it's not a true documentary to me then.
Yeah. It's.
I think family is so important in telling the story, even if you don't want to tell the whole story. You got to bring it up a little bit more. That was just my point.
Yeah.
I'm not telling Michael he's got to have Juanita. I got to do two segments. But my God, you know, I thought he'd give her a segment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, and it could be that she refused. Maybe she was invited and she refused.
True, so that, you're that, right about that.
Yes.
That's true, too. But can you really... Is it? You could still talk about it.
Yeah.
It happened. It's public.
He should be asked, and he should have said something about it, you know. But,
right.
You know, there also have been a lot of rumors that, you know, he did a bunch of things and so forth. And so I think that the divorce was fairly amicable, but there were certain things that allegedly he did, and maybe.
I'll tell you what was amicable. She made $168 million.
Exactly. I'd be really,
That's
really.
That's not amicable. That's not amicable. That's powerful. That's intriguing. And it's also well-versed.
That's right.
My God. $168 million.
You did what, Michael? $161 million? Okay, it's fine. That's right.
You want me to pick out the people in a crowd of 3,000 that would sleep with Michael Jordan to end up with $168 million?
Yeah, really.
there'd be men, women, elk. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, there's a bunch of guys in the chat room who are volunteering right now.
Oh, they're sold out.
All right. So I wanted to ask you about that. And then, you know, of course, they're going to cover the finale of the dynasty. And poor Jerry Krause is going to get kicked in the stomach and the balls and everywhere else again, because he is going to, you know, receive the brunt of why the team was disbanded. Now, my question to you, which is something that Fat Mike was talking about, I think, after you left the show.
I love Fat Mike.
A great appearance last night on the Fat Mike Chicago Sports Show.
Listen, those guys, I had the time of my life. Greg Braggs,
yeah.
Fat Mike,
yep.
Joey Two Scoops.
Yep. Outstanding.
Fat Mike wants me. Fat Mike wants to adopt me. Does Fat Mike know I'm a recluse? Does he know I'm a recluse? He wants me to go to barbecues. We want to go golfing. I love Fat Mike, but I'm a recluse.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm the same way.
My God.
So,
I'm 67, Fat Mike. I got to get motivated to open the door. See,
right.
he's a young guy, Fat Mike.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
These guys are young guys.
He's in his early 30s.
I understand. I was there. We were there.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I can't say it any other way. I'm burnt out, Fat Mike.
That's right. He's playing nine at some golf course today. So, you know, that's Fat Mike.
God bless him.
Absolutely. I wish I could play
it
nine.
It was a great time, and we had fun. I'm going to take a break from the show. First of all, my main goal, here, I'll give you a perfect example. Shy Fans in the Stands, one of our best shows, no doubt about
yeah.
it. And they do a good job producing it. And, you know, I really blew a kiss to Aldo last night. I know he's listened to it, from what I hear, six times already.
That's right.
But that's beside the point. Anyway, these guys are good. Everybody works hard. But they're young, and it was like 8:45. I was almost falling asleep.
You didn't sound like it, I'll tell you that. You were full of energy.
Once we get going, you know me, the red light goes on. But it was a good time. It really was.
It was. So Fat Mike was saying afterwards, and I have to agree with him, that this team looked spent in terms of energy. I don't think they would have won another championship. Now, I'm not saying it was okay to disband the team, but I think if they would have kept the team, there's just no way they would have won another NBA championship. Although,
well, who's going to beat them?
Yeah, that's true.
That's my point with Fat Mike, when Mike brought that up, and that was a good point that he brought up. All three guys brought up good points.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, if they're winning and they're the oldest team to win,
mm-hmm.
You know, I hear Bill Laimbeer say, oh, we were old, and, you know, but just that's why we got beat. I'm sorry. That Bulls team was the oldest ever. So why, if they won and they were the oldest team ever at that point, why couldn't they do it the next year? Who's going to beat them?
Yeah, you know what?
Elijah won. I mean, to me, even the two in between, I was more mad that Michael broke it off after three because you know, he had nothing left to play for. No, you play to win every year.
Right.
Can you imagine? There's not even a LeBron argument. Mm-hmm. Well, there's none now. If LeBron's at home, he's going, damn, this guy was good, you know? So
absolutely.
I mean, seriously, LeBron yes. can't be. After LeBron watches this, I want him to go on TV and say, I was better than Michael Jordan. I've never heard anybody say it. We've heard the debate, but very few people have ever said LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Ever.
That's true.
If you know anything about the game.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. So I'm trying to figure out why the Bulls couldn't have won another one. I don't know who would have beaten them. Who was coming up? Who won that next year? I don't even remember.
The San Antonio Spurs with Tim Duncan and David Robinson. So they were that up and coming
team.
David
Robinson against a little bit older Michael Jordan, but if he's really into it, and if the Bulls don't break it up, and you got basically Scottie and all them, I can't even remember where I was on this. I think I was all over the place on this. I sort of knew because the Dodgers with Ron Say, and you remember these teams, Aldo, Bill Russell,
oh, yeah.
Davey Lopes, and Garvey. You know what they used to do, the Dodgers? They'd get rid of their players like a year or two before they were really done.
Which was smart.
And then which was smart.
Yep.
And then the Dodgers would keep rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cubs had Say for 2 years. He helped them. The San Diego Padres had Garvey. He got them to the World Series. So even though the Dodgers gave up quality players, still a little bit past their prime, but still effective,
mm-hmm.
they were building for the future.
Yeah.
And it worked for them, but it hasn't exactly. I think it's been the end result, although, that's been Krause's downfall and Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you there. I'm totally with you. Hey, you were mentioning about LeBron James and the latest ESPN rankings of the all-time greatest NBA players. They've moved LeBron James up to the second greatest player of all time behind Michael Jordan. Do you agree with that? LeBron is number two.
I mean, seriously, if you want to go, it was Jordan first. Here's what I'm going to tell anybody. Anybody that thinks LeBron James is better than Will Chamberlain,
uh-huh.
I would be happy to debate you any day of the week.
Yep.
Will Chamberlain could have picked his teams, too.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me. Mm-hmm. Will Chamberlain could have gone to the Celtics.
Yep.
All right, if there was free agency. Okay, and then what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Will Chamberlain played for two of the great, all-time great teams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that happened to Will, he only won two. But he won with the Lakers, who won 33 road games in a row, or 33 games in a row.
Right.
And then he played for the Philadelphia 76ers with Cunningham and those guys. Will Chamberlain scored 100 points in a game. Will Chamberlain scored. So I'm putting Will Chamberlain second. Now, whatever you want to do with the other eight guys is fine. But anybody that wants to put LeBron James ahead of the Babe Ruth of basketball, and that's what he was, a power hitter, is out of their mind.
I'm with you.
Who do they got three?
At number three, they got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I'm in with that. Who do they got four?
Bill Russell.
That's not right. No.
That's a tough one because it was Bill Russell that basically denied Chamberlain more championships because Russell played, you know, partly because of Russell, but also Russell played on a team that was just very deep.
There you go. I was waiting for that. You did a good job bringing it back a little.
Yeah.
You have said he stopped. When Russell broke the rebounding single-game record,
mm-hmm.
Chamberlain broke Russell's record against Russell.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And in 1 year, Russell at Chamberlain never fouled out. Chamberlain averaged 1 year 48 and a half minutes a game because he never missed 1 second. He played every second of every game, including overtimes. So I just can't do it. I just can't. And I believe this. Magic Johnson, I believe, was better than Bill Russell.
And Magic
Larry
Johnson.
Larry Bird.
Magic Johnson is next on the list at number 5, and then Will Chamberlain at number 6.
Oh, my God. Will Chamberlain is not he's up higher, but that's okay. At least he's on the list. Bill Russell, I think, should be 9 or 10th. You can't deny the titles. But all these other guys were studs, man.
Yeah.
I mean, poor Patrick Ewing, he's not even on the list because he couldn't win a championship, right?
That's right. Never got one. And now,
hey, Michael, is Karl Malone on that list?
Not in the top 10, no. And
how about that?
And your guy, Steph Curry, is not on there because I know Steph is on your top 10 list. Or was.
Yeah, I'd like to maybe amend that. I don't know. That's a stupid thing. I think I got caught up in the wave. I saw he was ranked 13th, and people are pissed about that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I wouldn't have him.
It's interesting. It's different times.
Oh,
but
yes.
Will Chamberlain. I'm sorry. They changed rules for the guy.
Exactly. I mean, when you do that, you know you're a transcendent player.
There's goaltending because of him.
That's right. And
the lane is wider because of him.
Right. And they talked about eliminating the dunk because of Will Chamberlain. They were trying everything within the rules.
And you know, Jabbar. They eliminated it because Jabbar was too damn good.
Yeah. Exactly. Jabbar, you know, a lot of people underestimate how great he was because...
You know, if you wanted me to go really racial on this, the fact that Jabbar, that Lou Alcindor, who was the freshman team could have... The fact that they outlawed the dunk to stop him, if I wanted to go racial, pulling the race card, I might... As a white man, that looks so damn bad.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. It had
Are you kidding me?
It had
Why
a lot
would
to
you?
Do with that.
I was pissed when they did that, man.
Yeah.
I go, what, you're penalizing the kid because they can't stop him?
Right. And the probably the prettiest play in basketball, the dunk. You know, it's. I mean, basketball is always going to be a jump shot game, but the dunk is about exerting your will on somebody. When you wanted to,
I get a kick out of John Wood.
Oh, the great John Wood.
Bill Walton and Lou Alcindor standing in his office, and he's going, "I'm a genius."
That's right.
Oh, my God. They don't know he got his ass kicked for 15 years.
That's right. People forget that. Yes.
Hey, look at me. Look how great a coach I am. They got a picture of him with the two guys. He doesn't even come up to their waist. And I'm going, boy, is he uncannily a genius coach. He's got the two maybe greatest, him and Christian Laettner, and I'll put Shaq for a short period. Two of the greatest centers who ever lived.
Oh my gosh.
Ever. I mean, seriously. Oh.
Hey, before
imagine that, he's sitting there, and they used to come to him. Hi, I'm Bill Walton. Yeah.
Exactly.
<Wow.
laughs> Exactly. Hey, before I let you go, I want to get your comments on, at least there's going to be some sport, a televised sporting event that I think is going to interest most of us, and that is on May 24th, we've got a golf match that is going to feature Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. What do you think about that matchup that's going to happen again on Sunday the 24th on CBS Sports?
Look, I'm up for anything at this point. Okay.
That's right. Turtle racing.
Wait. The other day, they could have me and you play in a skins match and I'd watch it, and it would be the longest match in history.
That's right.
Okay. All I'm going to tell you is this. When last Saturday, I was flipping around and I got into rock tossing, what is this? Stone skipping championships on ESPN.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Stone skipping. You remember when you were a kid, you'd go to Ardmore Beach or Foster Avenue?
That's right.
Try to impress the girl. Check it out, honey. Yeah. And the stone would skip three times. I was actually watching the stone skipping championships. And at that point, I asked Beach. B goes, what are you looking for? I go, I just thought maybe the last owner left a revolver somewhere around here. You know, and I was like, I mean, my God, is this where we're at now?
Yes,
I mean, it's unbelievable. Then I'm watching the Cornhole Championship. You know, we're watching the Cornhole Championship. And can I just say this? I believe I could become a professional cornhole champion because you know what? Some of those guys blow. I've seen better games outside of Soldier Field where guys can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
That's hilarious.
Have you seen them?
Yes, I have.
Oh my God! Some of these guys get. I mean, please throw the ball in, throw the sack into the hole or whatever the hell you're supposed to do. Oh, he almost got that one in there. And I'm actually involved in this. I'm watching. Crazy. And the trick shots with the pool.
Yes, I saw some of that, yeah.
He can't beat you in a game of in a regular game of pool at Golden Q, but he'll sail a ball over three other balls and hit it off the bumper and hit the three balls and did the opposite corners. That's what it's come to.
We're
watching races where the race car driver is really playing a video game, and we're watching the TV of a guy playing a video game?
It's crazy.
We've lost our minds?
We have.
We have lost our collective minds. It's crazy, man.
Hey, I got to, before I let you go, because already in the chat room, people
say, I'll stay all day long. I got rhythm with you. You know that.
Yeah, we'll always have fun when we do our show, right?
I've got rhythm. Remember that song? That was a good one.
Oh, classic.
Was it the happenings? I don't know.
Woods and Manning are -210, so you got to bet $210 to win $100. They are the favorites. Are you betting on them, or are you betting on Brady and Mickelson?
Oh, I'm betting Woods.
Absolutely.
I bet them. You know, and I love Tom Brady, mm-hmm. but we're not playing football.
Yeah.
You know, Manning won't do anything to screw it up. These guys are all class athletes. It's a lot to bet 200, but
and Manny,
you know what?
Manny's been playing
200. That, but I would do.
Yeah, and Manny's been playing more golf, right?
God, I got the chills. We actually are talking about some answers. The thing that made us put us on the map, they took from us.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask you.
Uh huh.
So now the ball players can't take 50%. I love this.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about that. What is going on with this Major League Baseball and the Players Union yesterday?
I just wanted to bring that up before we get let go. 50, they want to play, but they don't want to cut the pie in half.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So
it's like you coming to my house and I'm going, Aldo, welcome. Here's a pie for you and your wife, but you guys can only have a small quarter of it, okay?
Yeah.
Me and my wife are going to eat the rest.
That's right.
What the hell's going on?
I don't know. This is
they know that sports is supposed to be an escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There we go. Mm-hmm. You've had it. You bit the wall.
No.
I got batted around by those guys last night.
Hey, a Fat Mike went, uh-huh, and you didn't even pick on him. I was, like, shocked. I was like, he let that one
he
go by.
He went what?
He went, uh-huh, when you said something.
Oh, no, that's you. You're the king of uh-huh.
Yes, I am. That's true.
you're the king of uh-huh. It's great. Aldo, we have a great show. We have fun. We had fun in the bar room today. The podcast is going to be going up. I love it. Jiggs was outstanding today. Believe me, brought his A game.
He really
He's got to be on TV. He should be on TV some after a Bear game doing something. He should be somewhere, man. Wow.
We should bring him on here at the Bears Ballroom Radio Network.
We're going to have to do more of that, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to hear his voice.
I don't know who I'm going to get next week. That's a lot of pressure now.
Ooh, we got
Komet and Ditka, Thijs, the Jiggets.
Oh, my goodness.
Know?
Oh my goodness!
I might change it up. I might put a baseball player on,
yeah.
And say here's 100. What do you want? 70? I mean, just cut it in half.
Should we bring on? Should we extend an invitation to Governor Pritzker? That way, you two guys can debate.
Man, I love. Hey, look. We could follow this, follow that. We all got to get to work. Believe me, I know Aldo. You know, we're all being careful, but at some point, sooner or later. I want to see the turnstiles turn. And I haven't worn... Have you worn a mask in public yet?
Once, yes.
Did you feel sort of bad about it.
I took it off after about 30 seconds.
I'm not wearing one. Screw it. I tell you what, you don't want to serve me because I don't have a mask on? Good luck to you.
That's a great way to
end. That's my little message for the day. Good night, everybody.